You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Good morning, thanks for listening. Charlotte Greenway in for Nick on Friday the 26th of April. But don't worry, you'll be hearing plenty from him during this episode as he's out and about getting the latest from Hong Kong ahead of FWD Champions Day on Sunday. We'll also hear from Adrian Cunhas on some interesting news that broke in France yesterday regarding France's star miler. But first, ahead of the jumps finale at Sandown tomorrow, I caught up with Patrick Mullins a little bit earlier this morning, just before he hopped on a plane on his way to Perth, and began by asking whether he'd enjoyed the last 7 days, which have meant plenty of travelling in getting from Ayr to Fosslass to Ludlow and riding in Ireland in between.
Very much. This is you can go over riding 1-4, 1-5 shots. I mean, very much a dream. But obviously, you always hear of Ruby doing that, going over and back. And cool to do it at a smaller level.
And this, of course, is because your father, Willie, is going for the British Trainers Championship at Sandown tomorrow. And it looks incredibly likely to happen. He's got a lead of just under 180,000 over Dan Skelton. But it's something that hasn't been done since 1954 by the great Vincent O'Brien. It would be a remarkable achievement. Just explain what it would mean to Willie and to the team back home.
Look, it was something to be incredibly proud of. Vincent O'Brien, like you said, he's not just a legend of the game in Ireland, he's the legend of the game. So to emulate him would be huge. We're not breaking new ground, we're just doing what was done 70 years ago. And he actually did it 2 years in a row, so we have more to do.
And I'm sure it's sort of come out this week that Willie says it may be something he gets the taste for. So the British trainers best watch out. And it's something you're not leaving to chance. You've got a really strong squad heading to Sandown tomorrow, headed by El Fabiolo, who, of course, was favourite in the champion chase and disappointed. He just never jumped that day. What have you seen from him at home that gives you confidence that, you know, he'll be a new horse tomorrow?
He was a little bit sorry for himself after Cheltenham. Willie gave me time and we built him back up. He's fresh and well himself. David Casey gave him a pop over four fences on Wednesday and was very happy with him. So, look, I think what happened in Cheltenham was on the cards. He was always taking a chance with some of his fences. And I would imagine he would have learned from that. I don't see it as a concern going into tomorrow.
And you say he'd have learnt from that. Do you think that's enough, or have you sort of had to sort of school him extensively in the meantime?
No, schooling extensively isn't really Willie's modus operandi. So yeah, look, he jumped there during the week. Gator Casey was on him. We were very happy with him. We left him at that. He didn't fall. He stumbled the back of the fence, and I'd imagine he'd learned from that. He got away with a few mistakes earlier in his career, and now after that experience, I'm sure he'll be a bit more careful.
And you've run three in the Bet365 Gold Cup, Nick Rocket and Manella Kakuna, who ran in the Irish National last time. Nick Rocket was seventh, Manella Kakuna third. Also got Aim Deji, who finished fifth in the Topham last time. Do you think Paul's made the right decision going for Nick Rocket?
It's a tricky one, very much a tricky one. Look, Nick Rocket's got a little bit less weight. I think they're quite closely matched on their form. I think Manella Kakuna obviously ran better in the Irish National, but I think Destroyer Ground will suit Nick Rocket better. And I think, Nick Rocket wouldn't be a very big horse. I think these slightly softer, smaller fences will give him, should bring him forward. So it wasn't a straightforward decision for Paul, but on the balance of it, I think he's probably on the right one.
And you're at Sandown tomorrow to ride Sir Gerhard in the Select Hurdle. You've obviously taken on Ampere Pass, and we'll come to him in a second, but you're Mount Sir Gerhard. He looked sort of on his way back to himself last time when he won over hurdles.
Yeah, look, it was a very nice opportunity for him last time. In Cork, he didn't stay in Cheltenham on the soft ground. And obviously won in Punchdown over hurdles before that as well. I rode him in the grade one novice shape at Fair Isle last Easter, and we finished second. It was a great run. I just think he has a little, he's squeaky, it's a very competitive race, but you know, the top two horses have got hard races in Aintree, and for me it wouldn't be a surprise if Sir Gerhard getting weight would come and cause a surprise.
And the dry ground, is that what he sort of appreciates?
Yeah, look, I think at this trip, I think the ground is fine. Obviously, when he won in Cheltenham over, it did a different bit of soft ground. But I think just 3 miles on soft ground really stresses stamina in Cheltenham.
You mentioned the top two in the betting, of course, Amperi Pass and Langadan, who Amperi Pass just got the better of at Aintree. Are you under the impression that he won with a bid in hand that day?
Yeah, he seemed to get to the front quite easily and appeared to idle in front. I don't think he had a huge amount of hand. You know, I think the two horses probably passed him after the line. I think that race would have, you know, obviously he'd had two or three hard races and got beaten before that. So I think getting back in front would have done a something to harm.
And of course, we can't move on from your Sandown runners without mentioning Easy Game, who's been pretty wonderful horse for all his connections. He just loves to win when he gets the right conditions. Do you think he's going to get those tomorrow?
Yeah, well, look, they've been watering in Sandown, so I think that means the ground is, you know, on the good side, and that suits him well. He didn't act at all in Aintree. Not entirely sure why. But if he can get back to his best form, he has to have a huge chance. I mean, he's a horse with a fantastic win record. And we'd be hoping he definitely should be able to add to our tally and pick up some pounds.
And then looking ahead next week to Punchdown, you've of course got a huge team going there. And if we were to talk about any of your horses with chances, we'd probably be here till Tuesday. But just focusing on a few of them, Ballyburn, what sort of form's he in at home? He's obviously the talking horse, the one that everyone can't wait to see.
Yeah, look, he's in super form. Donald Redmond, who rides him out, he worked the next day, it was really, really happy to him. The form from Cheltenham probably hasn't worked out particularly well, but I think obviously his form from DRS and his bumper run in Punchdown last year when he beat Dancing City and they sealed that form back to step up. So he's going to be obviously in the 2 mile and the 2.5 mile, and we'll see what way Willie will decide here at the time. But I don't think the trip is going to be that much of an issue for him. It'll just be what race he wants to run him in.
And Mystical Power, could we see him turn out again and sort of take in all three major festivals?
Yeah, that's a possibility. He got a hard race in Aintree, but he came out very well. He's a hardy horse, and he hasn't had a overly hard season. He's only had, I think, this is his fourth hurdle run. So, yeah, I think there's every chance we could see him turn out again.
And I was trying to find your sort of banker of the week, and I was split between State Man and Lossy Mouth, who have both run over hurdles. State Man in the champion hurdle, Lossy Mouth in the mares. You'd probably be disappointed if either of those were to get beat.
Certainly. State Man, David's record is incredible. I think he probably doesn't quite get the real recognition that he deserves because he's not that flashy. You know, he just gets the job done. Irish Point looks like he's going to turn up again. I don't think for some reason I was going to run through the best in Cheltenham. You know, perhaps he's been in Cheltenham 3 times now and hasn't been maybe at his best any time, even though he won the county hurdle. So perhaps he's not at his best over there. But I'd like to think back in Punchdown on home ground, which would be very hard to beat. And then Lock Him Out, you know, again, for Foibles, it's such a tricky year. So we don't want to overface her again, put her in against the champion hard horse. So we'll take the mares route this year. And I think then next year we'll be looking to take on State Man and Cautious Hill et al. With her.
Just finally then, looking at the Punchdown Gold Cup, of course Galopin-de-Champ is going to look to make amends because he got beaten this last year having won the Cheltenham Gold Cup. But he won the Cheltenham Gold Cup well again this year. What sort of encouragement have you got that he can go and do the job this year?
I think the Gold Cup was maybe a slightly easier race this year. I know they went to a real strong gallop in the race last year. It was a particularly grueling race last year. And, you know, I think that'll help them coming back to Punchdown. Perhaps last year, you know, I think maybe Brave Man's Game and Gallivan might have just got racing a bit early, and JJ7 kind of was riding some well, and that it came through and took advantage. So they're the two things you'd be hoping. But look, Fastro has beaten us twice a punch down, so we have to go and beat him there now. But we couldn't be happier with the horse. And it's going to be a fantastic race again. I mean, and what I love about him is, you know, he danced every dance this year. He's on the John Durfing, he's on the Leprechaun twice, Cheltenham going to punch down. He got beaten and turning up again. So I think if he could win again, it'd be brilliant.
Patrick Mullins there, and Rishi Prasad is alongside me and was listening in. Rishi, it looks incredibly likely that Willie Mullins will tomorrow become the first Irish-based trainer in 70 years to be crowned champion jumps trainer in Britain, a momentous achievement. But from your perspective, where do you stand on whether this is a good thing or a bad thing for our sport?
I think it's a good thing, Charlotte, if I'm honest. I think Willie Mullins is doing things that we're going to remember for a very long time in years to come. Obviously, you mentioned that it was done once before. Vincent O'Brien, one of the greatest trainers, one of the greatest names in the sport of horse racing, was able to achieve that. So for Willie Mullins to enter the same realm as someone like Vincent O'Brien, you know, when we were growing up, I remember being a child growing up and anything trained by Vincent O'Brien had that aura about it. And Willie Mullins horses, you know, wherever they go, whether it's Cheltenham, Aintree, Ludlow, Ascot, you know, they all have the same, they carry the same cachet. And I basically believe that if he sets those standards, then others have to try and achieve it. You know, he makes, I think when people become so good in their sport, I think it lends itself to getting other people inspired to achieve greater things. So overall, I think it's a great thing for the sport. I understand why some people might find it slightly awkward that he's all conquering, all pervasive, but he has worked his way there. Everything he has done, he has earned it on merit. You know, there are no shortcuts to doing what he's doing, and I think it's to be applauded.
And it sounds as though, from a few interviews this week, that this might not be the sort of the one and only time he's going to do it, which, as you said, is probably just an added incentive for the rest of the trainers in this country to reach that level.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully it sparks competition. Hopefully. I'm sure I would be very doubtful that Dan Skelton, Paul Nichols, Nicky Henderson, etc. will just say, oh, that's great news, you know, good luck to Willie. I think it will inspire them. It will encourage them to up their game, to try and make sure that they are more competitive than they already are. Obviously, they're very, all three trainers I've just mentioned, they're all very, very good trainers. They're all, obviously, in the case of Paul Nichols and Nicky Henderson, they're already great trainers. Dan Skelton is heading in that direction. But it could mean that they could become even better than they already are with the added incentive of Willie Mullins threatening their patch with more regularity. So hopefully it inspires better competition, which makes it more interesting for us.
For sure. And that's sort of something as well, though, that it doesn't happen overnight. So people can't expect them to necessarily bounce back next year. They may well, but it's got to be probably a sort of three-year, five-year plan for all those sort of young horses to come through.
I'm sure that's also true. Yeah, it you know, obviously there can be the big purchases, there can be the odd Caldwell Potter, but for a long term gain, it requires a bit more of a shift in policy, maybe a change in certain systems, etc. But you can be sure that those people who are going to be challenges for the trainer's title, and even those just slightly below it, you think that they're going to think about ways of, you know, becoming better, doing some things maybe slightly differently to try and find a little edge that they previously hadn't considered. Whether they can or not is a different story. Willie Mullins has proven that there are things that can be done to continue to get better and better over a period of time. So I'm sure that it will allow other people to examine the way that they go about things. So that's why, you know, when I say, when you asked me the question at the start about whether it's a good thing, I think it must be, because it will surely mean that other people will try to be better than they already are. So I think the overall result will be a positive thing. And as you say, over a period of time.
It's a pretty formidable squad that he's sending over to Sandown tomorrow. He obviously runs some of his top horses at Aintree. But tomorrow we've got El Fabiolo coming over to take on John Bonn. Patrick seemed pretty confident his jumping won't be a problem and he'll have learnt from Cheltenham. Who would you be siding with tomorrow?
That's a really good race. Obviously, El Fabiolo, John Bonn, Edward Stone. I still can't have complete faith and confidence in El Fabiolo's jumping. Not that I haven't before, but there has always been a little question mark. And then what happened at Cheltenham happened and he was taken out of the race. There was even a thought that he could have carried on that race, but then obviously if something had gone wrong further down the line, it would have been a pretty awkward situation for everyone to have to dealt with. So I can understand why he was pulled up, but that mistake was so serious, he would have struggled to have got back in the race properly. John Bonn, I thought, was pretty good at Aintree. Stepping up in trip, coming back down, that should be obviously not a problem. And Sandani goes well. But it's the end of the season. Funny things can happen. I just wonder that, you know, obviously John Bond's just had that race at Aintree. El Fabiolo is capable of a mistake. I just think this race might be ripe for an upset. Watch them finish first and second now anyway.
Well, maybe it's Edward Stone's day then. It's the kind of thing, if he could get an easy lead round there, he could be pretty electric.
That's kind of the way I would hope the race would go. If the only problem is Editor de Gites is in the race, and he might put a little bit of a dampener if you wanted to get an easy lead for Edward Stone, and Elixir de Nuts is also in it, may go forward. But just looking at the way Edward Stone ran at Newbury, at least if he's handy and allowed to bowl along with his own rhythm, I think he may prove far stiffer challenge for El Fabiolo and John Bonn by being a little bit more prominent and pressing on. He doesn't have to lead with Editor de Gites, and he can probably just sit one or two back and then approaching the pond fence, try and stretch them out.
Then just looking at the rest of the meeting, of course, Kitty's Light goes in the Bet365 Gold Cup after his gallant fifth in the National, and it'd be great to see him run well. But did anything else catch your eye?
I've actually liked 3 under 3.5 for that race for quite a while. I know he's got top weight, but I think this has been the target for some time. And he's obviously got up to a mark of 156, but I've always felt that he's got more in the tank. He never quite gives absolutely everything. Even when he won last time out, you still think there was a little bit up his sleeve. So I'm hoping that he runs well. Obviously, I'm happy to acquiesce to a more important story for Kitty's Light. But I particularly like the look of the select hurdle at Sandown on Saturday. Obviously, Para Pass and Langerdan lock horns again. But I like the idea of Patrick winning on Sir Gerhard. I think that can happen. He's a horse that has always been an immensely talented individual. And obviously going chasing has been an awkward thing for him. They tried him over 3 miles. He dropped back to 2 miles and, you know, he pulled up over 3 miles, fell going back to 2 miles. And apart from a blowout at the festival, I think he showed at the end of March that there's still life in him over 2 miles over hurdles. So I'm prepared to take a chance that he might be able to produce something. I know he's obviously going back up in trip to 2.5, but I just prefer his more fresh profile compared to some of the others. Obviously, the two principals had that tough race at Aintree.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how those two have come out of Aintree. And I guess you never know until you get back on the track, you know, how much it's taken out of them. But just listening to Patrick there talk about the Punchestown team next week, Gordon Elliott and Henry de Bromhead and the like are going to have their work cut out to make sure it's not a procession, aren't they?
Yeah, well, when you hear Patrick reading off the names of Galopandashamp, State Man, Lossy Mouth, Mystical Power, you kind of just say, okay, it's the same. It's the same names. They just move. They just move from event to event and dominate. And it's obviously tough for the competitors, but it's actually quite a joy to see them running as often as they have. You know, Galopandashamp has had a wonderful season. He's had a very busy time. Obviously, so has State Man, Lossy Mouth, less so, but we're seeing a fair bit of her now. So it's enjoyable to see that. And actually, you know, regardless of the final makeup of the field against Galopandashamp, to be able to see a dual Gold Cup winner as often as we have done this season has been fantastic. And we're at least going to see him one more time.
Yeah, and well, it could make up into a seriously good race. And Nicky sounds like he's very keen to send Shishkin over. Corrick Rambler sounds like he'll be going. Probably won't see Jerry Colomb there, but it could be sort of a Gold Cup round two.
It could be, and still think that you'd want to side with Galopandashamp, but then there's in the back of your mind the fact that he has had a fairly busy season, and it just adds a bit of intrigue to everything as well. So I quite, as a purely as a racing fan, I love the idea of the sort of adventurous campaign that I've had with Galopin de Champs. And I hope it gets rewarded, and I hope we get a great race, but I'd love to see him complete his season with another victory.
Yeah, he certainly deserves it. And just coming back to today's racing at Sandown, of course, I'm sure you'll probably have a few thoughts on Nostrum in the Bet 36 mile this afternoon. Is he capable of being the flag bearer, do you think, for the Sir Michael Stout Yard this season?
I hope so. Obviously, the disappointment of his final run, there was a valid excuse for that. He returned lame. So I think if you look at the very best of his form, you know, the return at Newmarket last season was hugely impressive. His two-year-old form was very good. He's had one or two issues, obviously, physically, but he's back in a race where he's got a decent opportunity. So I'm hoping that he can live up to all that expectation. I've been a big fan of his from the start. So we go again with Nostrum. But I hope that, you know, obviously I'm hoping that Sir Michael Stout might have a few others that might add as a bolster to Nostrum this season. But yeah, I'd like to see him come back with a win.
I just thought another really interesting runner today in the Gordon Richards Stakes is Okeechobee for the Harry Charlton team, because he missed all of last year due to injury. Thought he made a pleasing comeback behind Dubai Honor last time. He still has the potential to be anything.
Yeah, that was a really interesting run. I must admit, just looking when I was working at Kempton that day, and when he was entered for the race, I thought, well, this is quite an interesting angle, because his previous form was progressing through Handicap Company. And yes, he did, you know, put off a mark in the 90s, but it was a big step up to that run at Kempton. And he acquitted himself really well. He actually travelled really strongly into the race. And the winner is obviously very good, Dubai Honor, and he's heading in Hong Kong and got a fair chance on Sunday. But I thought Okeechobee ran with so much promise. There's that little element of doubt at the back of the mind that it was a long layoff before that comeback run. What effect, bounce effect, might have on him? But I think it's quite a winnable race. Going back to tactics again, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Tasman Bay ran a big race in that. I like the idea of front runners at Sandown. I think it works quite well. And quite often you can see them getting away and perhaps performing even above their previous best. So Tasman Bay got an easy lead when he won at Bath last time out. He's a big price. If he gets an easy lead again under David Probert, I can imagine he might take a little bit of pegging back, because his form in his younger days was pretty smart. You know, he's got some really good group form to his name. He obviously dropped into Handicap Company to win at Bath, but I can see him maybe catching one or two out, turning for home if he can get that easy lead. A fair few like to be held up in this race.
It's a bold shout. I like it. I'm just looking at the betting now. He's 22-1 outsider, but yeah, I'll happily have a few quid on him. Well, news in France broke yesterday regarding one of their brightest equine stars, and here's Adrien Cugnas to tell you more.
So big news today in France is that Diego La Centurion removed all the horses from Christopher Head Yard, and they're going to join the other half of the horses at Mauricio Guarneri, so down the road in Chantilly. And that's a big, big stroke for Christopher Head, because earlier, as you know, he have lost Bloisen, and now he've lost Brooks, Big Rock, and also many young and promising young horses, so that's really, really tough. So, and all the French-based horses of Diego La Centurion are going to go to Mauricio Guarneri. You know, he's a trainer. He was quite famous for being a leading juvenile trainer with a lot of winners in group races at two when he was in Italy. Now he's in France for a few years, and he had decent results and group winners. But he have a massive pressure on his shoulders, because he will have to do equal, if not better, than Christopher after with the horses, and that's a massive pressure. He will have to find a lot of staff suddenly to ride all these horses, and it's not easy at the minute in France. So it's going to be a massive challenge for Maurice de Guarnieri. It's not going to be easy at all. So I don't know, especially for this one, but if you look at the history of the young history of U.S. Centurion, and if you look at the previous trainers, So naming Carlos Lafontbarrias, Mauricio Del Cher, and other trainers in Spain. The thing is that the Leonardo Pujals, the owner of Silvia Centurion, he likes to take his decisions. So usually when trainers wants to direct the training and the training program of the horses, he's not really keen on that, and it happened previously that he removes horses from trainers' yard because the trainers were interfering in his owning decision, saying we should go there for this race, and the trainers was probably not okay. So I don't know yet, we don't know yet what happened with Christopher Head, but we know that it already happened with a few trainers before, and that he ended up removing the horses because the trainers were trying to interfere with his wish as an owner.
Rishi, as Adrian has just said there, it's really disappointing news for the Christopher Head yard because Big Rot looked pretty awesome last year, and yeah, he'll be a big loss for the yard.
Yes, but it's a old tale of owners doing what they want to do. And ultimately, you know, once they pay the bills, as much as we might find it awkward, disloyal, perhaps even, you know, some form of, you know, people might think that this is just completely out of order, it ultimately relies on the owners making the decisions and moving the horses where they want to, and then finding someone who is in sync with their process of decision making. And so as long as they're happy and they're paying the bills, then they can do as they please. You know, it's not unusual for this to happen. I'm sure it will happen again. It's disappointing for Christopher Head, obviously, having done so well with Big Rock, who is, I think he was pretty much a top-rated horse over a mile at the end of last season after that win in the QE2. So I'd be pretty certain that Christopher Head will get, you know, pretty good support in the future. But now it'll be interesting to see. There'll be more eyes on seeing what Big Rock is going to do this season, whether he can match up to at least what he did last season and perhaps even better it. But it's an unpleasant and unsavoury situation to look at from a distance when you see that number of horses move. And in the sequence, the way the sequence of events played out, but ultimately there's very little that can be done about it because it's a financial decision made by the people who have the responsibility for the finance, and that's pretty much the end of the story.
Yeah, it is. But as you say, there's plenty of pressure now on Maurizio Guarnieri because he's also got Blue Rose Sen, hasn't he? Because she moved in January, was it, with the first sort of lot of horses?
Yeah, when she moved, I think the original statement sort of suggested that they were moving a few horses to boost, obviously, the new trainer, but under the proviso that the rest would remain with Christopher Head. But then, obviously, things changed, and then the situation resulted in the rest of the horses moving. So that's what makes it a little bit awkward. But we don't know, I don't know the full extent of it all, other than what you read in the press. But the original impression that you got when Blue Rose Sen moved with a few others in January was that was it, and then Big Rock was going to stay where he was, but then obviously things change, and ultimately you go, well, there's nothing that the trainer can do about it because the bills are paid by somebody else.
And yeah, well, hopefully, selfishly I guess for us, hopefully they'll still have plenty of plans to come over to Britain throughout the season with Big Rock, because it'd be great to see him on these shores.
I hope so. I hope he can make it to Royal Ascot and more.
Well, as I'm sure you'll know by now, Nick is out in Hong Kong ahead of FWD Champions Day, and caught up a little bit earlier with the CEO of the Hong Kong Jockey Club, Winfried Engelberg-Breskus, and started by just sort of talking about how this meeting has now fully established itself as the second biggest event in Hong Kong racing.
I think our strategy was to have two key international events as anchor. Mm. We have definitely firmly established the Longines International, and now FWD, and you see the global interest. It gets more and more, and even here in Hong Kong. And it definitely helps that you have star horses we have like this year. But our strategy is very clear. We want to have two really global events where we, in a way, bring the best horses from around the world, and that we tell the story about world racing and how good Hong Kong racing is, and as a benchmark where we're standing.
we got some wonderful champions here as well. I mean, they're box office names anyway, aren't they? Golden 60, of course, the best of them. There's been quite a bit of talk about his break, his absence, his injury, his comeback. We said the roof would come off last time when he won. This could be epic, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could be epic. And it's, I have to admit, the Longines win was for me one of the most exciting wins last year. Because when he took off at the 350, it was like a fighter jet starts accelerating and taking off. So we hope the same. One of the issues with the trainers concerned is about a little bit of weather, because he needs good, maximum good to soft ground. If it gets a little bit different, but look, he has proven to be a global champion. I think it would be perfect if he would again demonstrate his world class. But if you look at the other races, in a way, you have really with exciting cup, where I think Prognosis will run an extremely good race. I was very impressed with the work of Romantic Warrior. And if you look at the sprint, there is no Lucky Sweeney's, but the California Spangle. And I'm really delighted in a way with the support we get internationally. And it took a little bit of time after COVID to get, again, confidence back coming to Hong Kong, etc. But we are happy in a way what we see. The only thing we're missing is Australia. I don't know, I wanted to say if they chicken out, but it is, I think for me, what we need.
You nearly got Australia. I mean, David Hayes' horse is basically an Australian in all but name, isn't he?
So therefore, if you see David Hayes will not be next year on the trainers list, you know why. No, joke aside, we would love in a way to have an Australian horse, especially sprinter, because they have wonderful sprinters. They have a lot of programs. That is the only thing which I think is the next stage, and the KPI for next year is to get an Australian sprinter to the race.
Well, we do have a lot of people listening in Australia, in Melbourne and Sydney and elsewhere, so the CEO is imploring you, and I'm doing so on his behalf, to get here to Hong Kong and race for quite a lot of $1 million.
And to prove you cannot only win in Australia, you can win overseas.
Oh, I see what you're doing there. You're playing the Aussies at their own game.
Yes, Scott. Yeah. I think they are very competitive, and that's why I think I love to go to Australia. I love the competitive Australian races. And then it would be good to see them here.
Good to see you, Winfred. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you. Great.
Rishi, a really big day for Hong Kong racing on Sunday. A great meeting, some great prize money on offer. There's a few British challengers heading over, but I think they've got their work cut out. It looks a really strong home team.
Yeah, the three big names to look out for are three huge names. California Spangle in the sprint, Golden 60 in the mile, and then Romantic Warrior, who obviously won the Cox Plate, lining up in the mono quarter race against Dubai Honor. I think the three big names will win again. I was lucky enough to be in Dubai to see California Spangle win the Alcoz. That was a mighty performance. Just really straightforward, top class, keep it simple. And a similar story with the other two as well, Golden 60 and Romantic Warrior. They're just straightforward, turn up, and 99% of the times they deliver. So it's going to be hard for the international challengers. I think Dubai Honor will run really well. I thought when he went to Kempton, he obviously looked like he needed the run. There was a bit of condition on this. I think he'll strip even fitter and be even sharper. But he's up against a top class horse in Romantic Warrior, and it might just be too much for him.
Yeah, although there does look to be plenty of rain out there from the videos that I've seen. It's been lashing down, so maybe that'll play into his hands.
That will help. That will certainly help, but he'll need every drop of it.
Well, Rishi, you mentioned Golden 60, and he's likely to be the star act on Sunday, as it could well be his final swan song. He's a Hong Kong equine legend, and I'm sure it'll be a great atmosphere ahead of the Champions Mile, with people desperate to see him one last time. He's back after picking up a little injury, as we heard from his trainer, Francis Loy, yesterday, and his jockey, actually. Vincent Ho is also on the injury comeback trail, and he spoke to Maddie Playle on Wednesday evening about how he's feeling ahead of Sunday.
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. Not an ideal year. Had two big injury in summer in Japan, and then a few months ago in January in Hong Kong. But now I'm recovering very well. Strength is here, fitness is here, and riding confidently. So all set to ride the Group 1, and great to be back, you know, on Golden 60, of course, to be a good, get on a good horse. just feels better.
Yeah, and speaking of injuries, he's had his own injury. Tell us a little bit about that.
Just a little bit on the tendon above his fetlock, but nothing serious. We just took our time and slowly built the fitness up again. For sure, my injuries is more serious than his. So, well, I came back in time, and it will too.
Fantastic. And reflecting back on December in the Hong Kong Mile was spectacular, and it must have been one of the best days you've had on him. Talk us through that race and how it felt to ride him. It must have been at his best. Do you think that was his best ever performance?
I think it was one of his best for sure. You know, with age, 8 years old, it doesn't matter, but he performed extremely well. He was fit, and unluckily we drew 14. It was a bit tricky, but I'm glad that I got the three wide cover position, and he just traveled extremely nice with me very comfortably, and then we kicked home very strong. So it was, it surprised me as well, because we didn't have any prep race before, which is go straight to the international. I know he's good when fresh, but I didn't expect to perform like this too. So it just amazed me too.
And you've ridden a lot of good horses here in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
How do you describe that feeling he gives you when he accelerates against horses of that caliber?
Yeah, it's still different. Even if you put him in a sprint, he will sprint them off. You know, he's one of those horses that can stay a little bit longer, like 2,000 meter, and he can still produce that sprint. And it's even better now because he know racing now, and he relaxed with me. I can put him in any position I want. He's out from the gate quick, very responsive. So it's even easier to ride him nowadays than when he was younger.
And with the break that he's had, given that what he did off December when he was fresh, does that give you a bit of confidence that coming into Sunday's race he's going to be on top form?
Yeah, definitely. The trial still wasn't his best, but the trial definitely bring him on, and we'll have turf gallop this Thursday, and that's the last prep work for him. And of course, it's more ideal to have three trials, but I think he's always an easy horse to train, and he build his fitness up pretty easily, and this two trials, and we have enough time for him to recover, and we have confidence that he will perform similar again this Sunday.
And seeing him in the mornings, he's always been a horse with a lot of character and quirks almost. You're saying he's getting more straightforward as he gets older, but is that what's been the key to his longevity, do you think, is that he has such a unique character?
Could be. Some good horses, they of course they are smart and they have their own character on the track, and they know when's racing and when's not, so and they are more dominant in the stable, so that's I just think it's those good horses' character. It's not the character that can help them in the race, but they're smart enough to know when it's racing.
Yeah, and he's a special horse for you personally. You spend a lot of time with him outside of the saddle.
Yeah.
What is your relationship with him like?
I think he's like one of my family members. I see him almost every day. After track work, I always go and see him, and if he needs a stretch or any massages, well, that's my job as well. So I definitely spend plenty of time with him back at the stable.
And he's getting on in age now, but he seems as good as ever when we last saw him in December. For you, I know you're very humble and you don't really like to talk about it, but it is a life-changing experience to have a horse like him and be involved in him, isn't it? How do you articulate the change he's made to your life?
I think I'm always grateful to be on him, of course, and lucky enough to ride him since he started racing and until now. And I think he definitely changed my career, and I become a better rider when I ride him throughout these 5 years. and you know, I think we help each other, but definitely helped me a lot more. Yeah, definitely helped my jockey career, my athlete's career, you know, to challenge my mindset every time, which is great until, you know, it's from the stage that I'll get very nervous until nowadays I enjoy to be on him, to perform together. We build a, you know, trust together. I think that's what, you know, horse riding is about, not just racing or equestrian. It's a connection, it's a trust with the animals, and that's the only horse that I've felt to have the connection with. So it's quite amazing. It's a great journey.
And we're anticipating that Sunday is going to be his final race. We don't yet know for sure. How are you feeling ahead of that potential, sitting on him in a race for the last time?
No, I don't think about that, you know. of course not. I just, you know, enjoy every moment with him, like usual, and to do our best in the race. And after that, it's another story. But now I'm just focusing on how to get things done.
Well, it's been fantastic to follow you both over the last couple of years. We've really enjoyed it, and can't wait to see what you both do on Sunday. Thank you.
Thank you, Maddie.
Thanks to Maddie Playle there. And yeah, Golden 60, he really deserves to go out with the wins, and very much be keeping my fingers crossed for him. Now, George Bowie is out in Hong Kong because he sent Believing for the chairman's sprint, and Nick caught up with him in person yesterday to find out why he believes in Believing, albeit the record for British sprinters in Hong Kong is not great.
Look, I think she's done very well from 3 to 4. I actually was showing you a video of her this week last year and how she's shit this year. So, look, it's a big challenge, I know that, but delighted to have been drawn barrier 4, and her work's been good, it's improving, and yeah, look, I don't think she'll ever race for a purse of 2.2 million sterling again, and it's never been done before, but I don't think it's been tried many times, and we like experimenting. Highclere are incredibly supportive of me, and just hope she runs well.
Yeah, and they're out in force as well. There was a good sized cheer went up when she drew stall 4. The barrier is crucial around 6 furlongs here, and you've got a bit of pace just to your inside as well.
Yeah, look, delighted to get where we were drawn, but also pace in 2 and pace outside. And I sat next to Harry Bentley as the post position came out, and you know, he just said we've got options now, and yeah, we've got options. So look, she's in good shape and all systems go.
Harry clearly has been riding here for a little while now. What was the main motivating factor in going for him rather than bringing a jockey in?
It's a hard time of year to get a jockey to come over. Week before the Guineas in England, and look, I've known Harry a long time. He's riding very well out here. He didn't have a ride, and it just fit really well. I think he'll suit her. He's a kind, patient rider, and look, he's a top rider out here. Rode a double last night and couldn't be in better form.
No Lucky Swainess, the defending champion. Wellington won the 2 previous editions. There doesn't seem to be, dare I say it, a sprinter quite of that sort of calibre in this race.
Yeah, it's an interesting division at the moment, I think. And that was initially, I remember calling Harry Herbert a couple of months ago and said, you might need to sit down before I tell you this plan. But I did think it lacked a real star, you know, without Lucky Swainess. You never wish ill on anyone, but yeah, he's not there. He probably would have been an odds-on shot. California Spangle was obviously very impressive with the tailwind, got to the lead in Dubai, and they couldn't get to him. So, obviously, it's a good race. It's a Group 1. I'm certainly not knocking the race at all. There's some hardened Hong Kong Japanese sprinters. But, as you say, it might just leave a bit of an opening to certainly run a bold race anyway.
George, thanks so much. Good to see you here. All the very best.
Top man. Thanks, Nick.
A bold decision by the George Bowie and Highclere team, and hopefully it pays off with Believing. Now, because it's Friday, we of course need to get our something for the weekend from the Sporting Life's Dave Ord. Dave joins me now. Dave, where are we heading then for this week?
We're heading back to Sha Tin in Hong Kong. Sadly, not literally, as I look out of a dreary office window in Leeds. But I've been looking at the time form numbers for Sha Tin on Sunday for three big races and the tasks facing the British Raiders. And they're stern, as you would expect, given the quality of opposition. If we start in the 750, the Chairman's Sprint Prize, we're believing, is in action. Well, £8 is the difference between Believing's weight adjusted rating of 131 and the top rated California Spangle, who of course we saw winning at Maidan at the World Cup night. To California Spangle, weight adjusted time form rating of 139, Believing 131. That put Believing as the fourth top rated in the race behind Mad Cool 138 and Victor the Winner 137. But there is blue sky between the top rated and those lower down there. So it looks like Believing's task, as the betting market suggests, is mirrored by the time form numbers. The 9 o'clock, the champion, the FWD Champions Mile, another group one. This is a fantastic race, isn't it? We've got Gold 60, 143, as you would expect, weight adjusted, top rated. Voyage Bubble, 139, and Beauty Joy, 138. Brave Emperor, if you want to go down, we're going to find Brave Emperor down there with a rating of 130 for Archie Watson. So just about a stone behind Golden 60 on the time form numbers. And then last and not least, in the 940, we've got Romantic Warrior for the QE2. Romantic Warrior, top rated 140, weight adjusted. Not that much in hand, a prognosis 138, and the Japanese Red Hishi Iswaza on 137. Dubai Honor for William Haggis, 133 with a plus symbol, suggesting that number could go further north. Whether it's £7 at Sha Tin on Sunday to beat Romantic Warrior remains to be seen. But Dubai Honor on the numbers, 133 plus 7 off Romantic Warrior, but would look the best British chance of the weekend over in Sha Tin.
Yeah, I mean, records speak for themselves, and I think the British challengers have certainly got their work cut out, but we haven't always sent that many over, so maybe it's slightly skewed.
We haven't, and numerically, it seems such an interesting meeting as well. The prize money is fantastic, and it's really competitive. As you say, it's very, very difficult to win over there. I always think if somebody's going to crack it, William Haggis would be one of the guys who would do, the way that he's been travelling horses with great success in recent years. And you think it's just something that they'll get their teeth stuck into at some stage. But as you say, when you're heading over there and you're taking on the likes of California Spangle, Golden Six, and Romantic Warrior, you know that your tasks are facing by the time you set foot off that plane.
And just looking a little bit closer to home, we've also got the Jumps finale on Saturday at Sandown. Is there anything there that sort of catches your eye?
Yeah, the trainer's title narrative, which has been bubbling away. Most people are prepared to hand Willie Mullins the trophy now. He isn't prepared to accept. I still don't think Dan Skelton's quite given up hope. You've got to dream, and look, it's probably Mission Impossible. But there is, on time form numbers, every chance you're going to have at least one big hurrah on the final day at Sandown in the feature, or the big betting race of the day, the Bet365 Gold Cup. Well, Dan's got Lemelos in there, who at 169 is the top-rated horse in the race on time form. He comes out top on the figures. He's got the course flag, which is one of the positives, denotes a horse in focus. He's 2 from 2 at Sandown. The track suits him. There are two big pluses in Lemelos's favour. He's 169 top rated. But if you want to know what's next top rated, it's Nick Rocket for a certain WB Mullins. 166p for Nick Rocket. That P indicating that the handicap was in key. He's capable of further progress. So there might be another big race or two for Dan at Sandown on Saturday, and Lemelos 169 is top rated in that feature Bet365 Gold Cup.
Yeah, and Dan Skelton, to be fair, for the challenge he's put up this year, he deserves to go out on a high.
100%. It'd be lovely, wouldn't it, to win a couple of big races at Sandown on Saturday. He's had an absolutely fantastic season. I mean, before Ian Maximus won the Grand National, he looked to be heading for that trainer's title. With his numerical, the ammunition he sent over has been remarkable. It continues through to the final day. But yeah, for the season he's had and the way that he's fought this trainer's title, it would be fantastic to see Dan get another winner or two on that big card at Sandown.
Great, Dave. Thanks so much. And we'll speak to you again next week.
Thanks, Charlotte.
Well, it's that time of year again. The list of riders has already been announced for the Magnolia Cup, the Markel Magnolia Cup, one of the best known charity races run anywhere in the world, which this year will be raising vital funds for My Sister's House. It's raised £2.4 million
since its inception. My Sister's House is a West Sussex women's centre which supports any self-identifying woman to improve their welfare and well-being, reducing their risk of domestic abuse and supporting recovery. Amongst the dozen riders this year is the leading Australian racing presenter, Lizzie Jelfs, who is coming back to her homeland to compete and to ride in a race for the first time in a little while. Lizzie joins me now. Lizzie, Australian race fans and viewers will know you extremely well, as will many viewers of racing in the UK. How excited are you about coming and showing what you're made of?
Oh, well, I'm very excited to be part of the 12 women who are competing in the Magnolia Cup. Obviously, like it's such a wonderful experience, not only for myself, but to also meet and be part of such a unique race. Haven't, you know, going to, you know, be really honest with you, haven't ridden for a very long time. So definitely a little bit nervous about getting back aboard. And I've been doing a little bit of training and hoping that, you know, my body will remember exactly what it used to do for a good part of my younger life.
Yeah, just tell us a little bit about your background before you went to Oz and found fame on the telly. What were you doing in England?
Well, I worked for Charlie Edgerton for probably about 2 years, and I was absolutely, prior to that, obsessed with horses, wasn't a racing fan, but was more a pony clubber, like a lot of young girls and boys growing up in the UK. And I sort of found my way into working for Charlie, and he was so supportive in encouraging me and teaching me a lot of, well, basically the basic skills of riding out. And as soon as I rode a racehorse, I thought to myself, well, you really get paid for this. And my parents are not from a racing family. They're completely working class, and they sort of begrudgingly let me go into the stables. And I sort of, you know, all I wanted to do was travel and be part of this wonderful racing world. So that's when Edgy, he introduced me to one of the biggest trainers in Australia. That's David Hayes. He was in Hong Kong at the time, but he had a operation called Lindsay Park. And that's where I first started back when I was 19. And really, the rest is history. I've been part of Lindsay Park for a good 15 years, travelled all around the world with horses, have had the most amazing opportunities and experiences. And then there was a time when I was sort of pondering what I was going to do, whether I was going to continue being part of the racing fraternity or whether I was going to step out and do something else. And that's when the media opportunity came up. And I've been doing that for the past 9 years now.
And your reputation has been burnished by the fact that you are considered to be, I'm not going to spare your blushes here, the best paddock judge there is. I don't know anyone else in the world who can give a paddock report and it can move the market like you can. Are you allowed to tell me your secret or not?
I suppose it's just all those years of experience. I mean, there is some incredibly good paddock judges around the world, and I hold Jenny Chapman up with the very, very best. I mean, she's sort of the doyen as far as all of us are concerned. But I think it's, I always get asked about how I've been able to sort of, you know, make this role my own. And I think it's just all the years of experience that I've been able to have. I've been able to convey that to the viewer and the punter, and it's been helpful as far as finding winner. I mean, in Australia, punting is the number one driver of our racing economy, so it's so important, and we're very punt focused. So I think it's just something that I've learned. I give my opinion, and yeah, it's sort of, you know, has been able to help people find winners and make educated decisions.
I'm looking down the list of riders for the Magnolia Cup, and for all that there are some wonderful sports people in here, Ellen Barber's an international heptathlete, and there are, you know, people who've ridden, I've got to say, you might have a bit of an edge, Lizzie.
I feel like I'm getting a lot of pressure from everyone saying that I've got a bit of an edge. I've been out of the saddle for a very, very long time, and I probably haven't, you know, I've done a lot of fitness since I found out that I, you know, been to the gym and lots of Pilates. I haven't ridden enough. I'm starting next week doing a lot of riding, but I suppose, yeah, I have got a bit of an edge as long as I can, you know, dust off the boots, and had to borrow a pair of boots the other day off of another jockey. So I'm definitely, starting right from scratch again, but I can't wait, Nick. I'm really looking forward to it. It was such a wonderful experience, and it's really sort of at the heart of what I love. It's a women's focused charity that we're backing. It's 12 inspirational women, and we're, you know, just going to have a lot of fun, and hopefully I come out on top.
Well, we look forward to following a few more of the participants' progress on this podcast as we get nearer to the race. Now, Rishi, thank you so much for joining me this morning. But before you go, please, can I get a tip from you?
Well, I was thinking of obviously putting up Nostrum, but it's a tough race, first time back. So I'll take that weight off him and unload it up to Port Tasman Bay, I thought, each way. I know it's a small field, but I think he could get a few of these horses off the bridle if he gets an easy lead, and I hope that he can at least give us a decent run at a big price.
Looking forward to this one. Thanks, Rishi, and thanks to all of today's guests. I hope you enjoy all the racing over the weekend from all over the world. Nick will be back with you on Monday morning, but I'll be back with a Saturday edition from 9 p.m. before that. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.